Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
This hour, we're talking about political engagement. You know that saying, if you can't do something well, don't do it at all? Well, maybe that should apply to voting. Georgetown University philosopher Jason Brennan says too many Americans vote badly, and he thinks our elections would actually yield better results if more of us just stayed home.
The basic thought here is that how we vote makes a difference. We're not simply choosing flag colors or the national anthem, but we're picking policy. So the thought here is that to make an informed choice requires a tremendous amount of knowledge, and there's good reason to think that a large percentage of the American public doesn't have this knowledge.
Wow, you don't think much of your fellow citizens.
Well, in a sense, I do. I like to think of it as I have a very populist view of civic virtue with an elitist view of voting ethics. So my view is something like, it's hard to vote well, but that doesn't mean you can't contribute in a positive way. There's lots of other things that we can do and that are more value to society than voting, really.
Okay, well, let's talk a bit about what it means to vote badly. I mean, I was looking over some things that you've written, and in a recent paper you wrote, many of my fellow citizens are incompetent, ignorant, irrational, and morally unreasonable about politics.
That's right.
that's really, wow, you think a lot of Americans are not even competent to vote. So why?
I think here the thing is not that people are dumb. It's that they have very bad incentives. The problem is that one individual vote doesn't make any difference. And that's why most people are likely to vote badly, because the consequences are so small. So the thought here is it's clear that we are incentivized through the political process to indulge our biases, to think kind of irrationally about politics, to use politics as a team building exercise. It's us, the good Democrats versus the evil Republicans or vice versa, and to not really pay much attention to politics. So most people, when they do polls of political information, most people know hardly anything. Like in the year 2000, slightly more than half of voters knew that Gore was more liberal than Bush. But then if you ask them follow-up questions to try to find out if they know what the word liberal means, it seems like they don't. And that's among voters, and voters know more than the average person.
Well, I guess I'm sort of wondering, even if a lot of people vote badly, and and you've certainly laid out the case that we're a nation of political incompetence, don't even stupid people have a right to vote?
Yeah. So the question here is, do they have a right to vote versus is it the right thing to do? And you can have the right to do something, but it not be the right thing to do. So I have a right to free speech, which means that other people shouldn't oppress me. They shouldn't interfere with my speech. They shouldn't throw me in jail. And one of the things I can do with my right to free speech is, say, advocate the genocidal slaughter of Jews. You know, I can advocate Nazism. Now, it's wrong for me to do that, but I have the right to do it. So there's all sorts of things that we have the right to do that other people should let us do, but nevertheless that we shouldn't do. In the book of the Ethics of Voting, what I'm saying is you should think of voting as having a duty of care. In the same way that if you were a juror on a capital murder trial, you should pay attention to the information that's presented to you, the information that's relevant to deciding whether or not the person's guilty. You should process that information as scientifically as possible, and then you should vote in a morally reasonable way. So you wouldn't say the person's not guilty because, you know, it's a woman and you think she's pretty, or you wouldn't decide to say the person is guilty because he's Muslim and you don't like Muslims.
Yeah. Well, you've also made an argument for restricted suffrage. And
Yeah.
So, frankly, as a woman, a member of a group that was only granted the right to vote, you know, relatively recently, even the phrase restricted suffrage opens up all kinds of ugly vistas. We've got
right.
this long history in this country and obviously others of those in power keeping themselves in power by restricting the rights of others to vote. I mean, why would you even want to open the door to that kind of disempowerment?
Right. So, you know, the paper you're talking about, it's a philosophy paper, primarily was aimed at other philosophers. And here what the goal of that was to say was, in the past, we've restricted voting for all sorts of crazy bad reasons, just, you know, things having to do with gender and race that have nothing to do with the quality of voting. But that doesn't mean that it's inherently objectionable to restrict voting in the same way that if we were deciding that we're not going to let any homosexuals drive just because they're homosexual, well, that's a really bad reason to restrict people from driving. But on the other hand, saying we shouldn't let some people drive because they're incompetent to drive and their driving imposes a risk upon others, that seems like a good reason. So when I say, at least in principle, we shouldn't let people vote who are going to impose too much risk upon others, that seems like, in principle, that's okay with me. The question here is just, is it possible to implement that system without it being abused?
Yeah, unlike some of your analogies, you're talking about a system of political power. I mean, the right to access to education in our country is not necessarily completely fair. So if you're basing the right to vote on how educated somebody is and how much information they consume, you're leaving out huge swaths of the population.
Yeah, that's right. And this is, I call this the demographic objection to the kind of arguments I present. We know from all sorts of studies that political information is not evenly distributed. It tends to correlate positively with being white, with being male, with having higher income, with having higher IQ, with being employed. It tends to correlate negatively with being black, with being a woman, with being poor, with being uneducated, et cetera, et cetera. So political knowledge correlates with all the things that make you advantage, and it correlates negatively with the things that make you disadvantaged. So let's just say instead of having a restriction of the right to vote, we just say, if you're not a good voter, stay home. You should voluntarily abstain. If people followed that advice, you'd get a disproportionately white, male, educated voting electorate as opposed to having something that represents the country as a whole. So that does seem on its face to be a worry, but there's a couple of reasons why I think that's not as big of a worry as it seems at first glance. So let's say you have a large percentage of people choose not to vote, and they all belong to a certain demographic. Is that going to be to their disadvantage or not? Well, it depends, first of all, on how many of them there are, but it also depends upon what they know. So let's say you've got a bunch of people living in the inner city, they're neglected, they get lousy education, and they end up not voting. Is that going to hurt them? It kind of depends on what they're voting for. It's easy for them to have good, what we might call outcome preferences, where they know that they want lower crime, they know that they want higher employment rates, they know that like things are not good. But it's difficult to have good, what we might call policy preferences, knowledge about what policy instruments will actually achieve those goals. So if you want to cut unemployment, should the government spend more money? Should the government spend less money and contract taxes? To know that kind of thing, you need to know economics, and most people don't know that. So what I tend to think here is...
So are you suggesting that if just the quote-unquote elites and informed people voted, they'd somehow vote in the best interests of the poor inner city uninformed voters?
If only the kinds of people, I know it sounds really extreme, but like if only the kinds of people that I think of as good voters were to vote, I think it'd be more likely to promote the interests of inner city people than to just have inner city people vote. And here's why. Because we can look at the kinds of things that people advocate and why they advocate them. And we have find that the policy preferences of the elite tend to match up to what economists think. So they'll say things like, we need to have different kinds of education. We need to experiment with paying people to do private education. We need to reduce the drug war. That's a big, big thing. And so when I look at the policy preferences of what I would consider elite voters versus what I consider non-elite voters, the policy preferences of the elite voters look to me like they're the ones that would tend to match up with what economists think. And the other thing that you can do here is using a method developed by a political scientist named Scott Althaus is you can survey people and ask them what their policy preferences are. You can then give them a quiz of basic political knowledge, and at the same time, you can collect their demographic information. How much money do they make, what their sex is, how much education they have, and so on. And once you have all that information together, who they are, what they believe, and what they know, you can figure out statistically using kind of first semester statistics, what would the American public want if only it were fully informed? So here you're correcting for the fact that there's demographic differences and just asking what difference does information by itself make, correcting for the fact that some people are whiter than others.
Well, and then why bother having elections at all then?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting proposal here I've been toying with recently. Why not, instead of having the kind of election that we have now where we ask the unenlightened public what does it want, why don't we ask the enlightened public what it wants? Why don't we... collect this information and then figure out based upon that information, what would the public want if we keep everyone exactly the same in terms of their demographics, but made everybody fully informed? And what we find is an interesting set of things. It's neither very Republican nor very Democrat. It's Republican in some things, it's Democrat in others. So, you know, people want to increase taxes overall, but they also want overall freer trade. They want to have more abortion rights. And they want a different set of environmental protections than the ones that we actually have, and et cetera, et cetera. I tend to think that that's evidence that that's what we should be doing rather than the things that we actually tend to vote for.
I am slightly stunned. It sounds like you're suggesting we could just take the people out of the democracy and, I don't know what, run it all with machines and statistics.
Well, in a sense, this is based upon the people, but it's based upon a better version of the people. It's this kind of thing. I call this government by simulated oracle. The thought is the knowledge that we need to govern is kind of out there, but how can we sort of extract it from the people? So in this sort of system, you're having everybody, in a sense, cast a vote, but then their vote is getting, to some degree, weighted based upon the knowledge that they have, but at the same time correcting for differences in demographics. So we can see things like, okay, this person is rich and white and favors free trade, and this person is poor and black and doesn't. Is the difference in the favoring of free trade because that person is poor and black, or is it because of education or something else? With basic statistics, you can figure that out.
It sounds like just putting an awful lot of power in the hands of economists and statisticians. I mean, who's going to be coming up with the statistics?
Really, the kinds of statistics here, they sound really mysterious. They're not. They're just first semester statistics. So the type of thing we're talking about now is the kind of thing where you could have all the data public and then news stations can evaluate it themselves and hire their own statisticians to sort of check the results to see if this is really what the enlightened public wants or not. You know, and one thing about this, too, is when I think about the fact that there's a demographic problem in that some people are much more likely to qualify as good voters on my theory than others, I think that's a problem. I think that shows an underlying injustice, but I don't think that necessarily means that it's injustice about who should vote. I think it's because we are mistreating certain groups. And so the thing here is to solve the problem by, you know, getting rid of the drug war or, you know, improving education and doing other kinds of things that are like getting rid of the things that disadvantage some people rather than just giving them the right to vote. I don't think giving them the right to vote or having them vote en masse is really doing them much good. And some evidence for that is just they've been voting and it hasn't really helped all that much.
I'm curious, do you vote?
Yeah, you know, I do sometimes vote. I don't always vote. As I said before, I have a what you might call an elitist theory of voting ethics and a populist view of civic virtue. I think there are lots and lots of ways to contribute to the common good and be a good citizen that don't involve voting. So I don't think there's an obligation to vote. I think there's maybe a general obligation to sort of serve the common good one way or another. And I think most people discharge that. But when I do vote, what I look at are not simply things like who are the people running and what is their voting record. That's simple, basic stuff, but that's not enough to be a good voter. I think you need to have a background in basic social sciences. You should know some basic political science and some basic economics and some basic sociology because you need to be able to evaluate the proposals that these people advocate. If somebody says, we're in a recession, so what I want to do is massively expand government spending to fight that recession, okay. Great. Well, now you need to know something about fiscal economics to know whether that works or not.
Jason Brennan is the author of The Ethics of Voting. He teaches strategy, economics, ethics, and public policy at Georgetown University.